It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
In the pole position.
The pole's position.
It's time for pole's position.
The Bears have the number
9
pick in the 2023 NFL draft.
What will Ryan Poles do with the number
9
pick?
There's no way to know.
We're counting down the days to the NFL draft.
How about the pick with the Bears?
I would trade Justin Fields.
I'm Justin Fields all the way. I love the kid.
The Bears are going to select Bobby Boucher.
Wow, I did not know that. That's a good little insight right there.
Poles position with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Chicago Bears select
9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show, afternoons on The Score.
We get inside the mind of Ryan Poles every day at 3 o'clock. Who's he going to trade for? Who's he going to sign? What's going to happen? Why did he do what he did? Who's he considering? And now that they've traded down to 9, we got to start profiling different players at the top of the draft.
And you know what? This name has been coming up a lot. Lucas Van Ness from Iowa started showing up in lists of ranked prospects and mock drafts, and then there was more, and then people really started to dig into the tape and fall in love. Daniel Jeremiah's got him top 25 now. Kiper, I think Mel Kiper has him number 12. It's like everybody's kind of growing in interest, and he's a fascinating prospect. And oh, by the way, he's from Barrington.
So we're going to start. We're going to talk to two different people today. We're going to talk to his coach who's training him for the draft in a little bit. But right now, joining us on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline, Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, where we will be broadcasting tomorrow and the next day, Joe Sanchez, his coach at Barrington High School, with us on The Score. Coach Sanchez, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Doing great, guys. It's an honor to be on your show, so thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We wanted to get to know a little bit more about Lucas Van Ness. You still in touch with him?
Yeah, actually, we spoke last night.
Okay, that's recent enough for us. how big of a Bears fan is he? Would it be a big deal if he was a Bear?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt. I think for any Chicago area kid to be drafted by your home team, just to know that that's even just a possibility would be unbelievable for him and his family. But, you know, if you know Lucas, just being in this position and having the opportunity to play in the NFL is an unbelievable dream of his. So yeah, but to go back to be able to come here to Chicago would be awesome.
So tell us about him as a player in high school, an offensive lineman for you, coach, and a pass rusher as well at Barrington, not among the top 1,000 recruits nationally in 2020. Wondering what kind of player he was. I wonder why he wasn't thought of in that way coming out of high school.
You know what? It's I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he was in this day and age, it's rather rare, but he was a traditional high school player. And what I mean by that is he took the traditional route. He played played freshman football as a freshman, played sophomore football as a sophomore, and didn't come up to the varsity until his junior year. And not for a lack of talent, certainly. There were some very good players ahead of him. But Lucas, if you know anything about his story, also was a really good hockey player. And from my understanding, didn't really pick up football till high school. His junior year, we all knew what he could be because you certainly saw the size, the athletic ability, the bend, you know, for a kid his size. But because of hockey, never really fully committed to football until after his junior season. And when he committed and really decided that this is what I want to pursue, I mean, that's when he really started to take off. You know, for us, he was a tremendous player. As a junior, he started as a defensive lineman, defensive end. And then as a senior, was a captain and was a two-way player, a starter on offense and defense. And obviously, you know, he had the opportunity to play at Iowa, his other dream school. You know, if we're talking about the Bears being a dream, playing for the Hawkeyes was a dream for him and his family. And, you know, it's just it's been an unbelievable ride.
As you watched him develop at Iowa, what was the key? What, you know, got him from good two-way player in high school to potential top 10 pick in the NFL draft?
You know what? I just think it's his work ethic. I mean, certainly he's been blessed with a lot of gifts, but Lucas is humble and he's hungry. I know that's cliche, but it's 100% true. I think because Lucas also didn't take the traditional path, meaning like he didn't get burned out by playing football from such a young age, and really didn't take it, you know, to that next level until after his junior year in high school. I think that also made him hungry. Like he was still learning the game, and had a great desire to want to keep getting better. And obviously was coached by some tremendous people at the University of Iowa, you know, Coach Ferentz, Coach Bell, Coach Parker, Coach Wallace. I mean, those guys are awesome. And I just think it's his work ethic and it's his humility, you know, and just paying attention to the details. And, you know, so I think that was, you know, for me personally, what I think was his greatest attribute and his ability for such growth.
Coach, Joe Sanchez of Barrington High School is here with us. Everyone writes about his motor and raves about the motor. I saw there's one game he had 9 quarterback pressures at Iowa. There was one time in Iowa he blocked 2 punts in the same day. Just like wherever you put him, that motor seems to show up. Does that track with the kid that you saw in high school?
Oh, most certainly. I mean, that's just Lucas only knows one speed. And that's full speed. And that's a great thing, because when one of your best players only knows one speed, well, then that means everybody else is going to play at that speed. And yeah, I mean, it certainly tracks, but that's just his personality and who he is as a person. And watching him at Iowa and seeing him play the way he did, beyond the fact that he got significantly stronger and bigger, was a lot of what we saw here at Barrington.
You said you talked to him last night. How is he experiencing this pre-draft part of the process?
Yeah, him and his family, they're obviously enjoying it. I mean, they know it's a process and it can be a little overwhelming at times, but Lucas has such great perspective. He's just really taking it, you know, one day at a time and really just trying to appreciate it, because, you know, much like when we went through the recruiting process together, me and him and his family, you know, there are very few times in life when people are recruiting you and wanting you, you know, to be a part of their school, to be a part of their franchise and their program. So I think Lucas, you know, understands, you know, that this is you know, once in a lifetime opportunity, but also understands that, you know, whoever he gets drafted by, you know, all that stuff goes out the window, and now it's time to go back to work. So, you know, I think he's just enjoying it. You know, going to just try and enjoy this process because, you know, as you guys know, I mean, it is once in a lifetime, and he'll get a chance to look back on this time very fondly.
Coach, Ryan Poles seems to be targeting Bears fans. Got you know, Robert Tonyan had an Urlacher jersey in his basement. T.J. Edwards had a Devin Hester jersey that he wore to tailgates. Cole Kmet is obviously here, though his dad was a Packer. Lucas's girlfriend is Cole Kmet's younger sister, and I know kind of they're tight now. Were they tight then? Did you know the Kmet family in high school, Coach?
You know what? We knew of them. I didn't know them personally, but obviously being in the area, you knew how talented the boys were, and certainly would have loved the opportunity to have had them be here at Barrington, but they did just fine at St. Viter, and you know, and once again, I mean, you knew of them and you knew about them, but, you know, I don't know them personally. And, you know, once again, but everything I hear about them is they're a tremendous family. And, you know, the whole thing with Lucas and Frankie, I'm not really privy to, so I'm not going to speak to that. You know, I don't want to get myself in any trouble, but
that's fair,
you know,
Coach.
So I'm going to stay away from that.
Well, then last thing, and we'll talk to the guy who's training him for the draft here in just a minute, but, you know what the Bears run. Do you think he's a 3 technique? What do you think he profiles to? 6'5", 275, monster combine. What do you think he profiles to in the NFL?
You know what? I think he could be, but I think he's also, you know, could be an outstanding defensive end. I think the thing, and you guys know this as well as I do, you guys study the game. In the NFL now, it's all about versatility, and it's all about, you know, sub packages. You know, so, you know, and you saw Iowa do that. They moved him all over the place. And I think that's probably one of the greatest things that could have happened to Lucas, because now it's made him more marketable now, you know, as he's getting ready for the possibility of getting drafted to, you know, to whoever. And I just think, you know, what a lot of NFL franchises are looking for is they're looking for guys that can become matchup problems at any position. So I think you could take him and you could play him anywhere you wanted. And, you know, he certainly knows he's got things to get better at, but I think he'd pose a matchup problem anywhere you put him. And whatever he's lacking, trust me, he'll quickly figure that out, diagnose it, and he'll get better at it, you know, before you know it, and you won't talk about it ever again.
Joe Sanchez, Lucas Van Ness's coach at Barrington High School. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. We appreciate the insight there. So we'll get Eddie McGilvra up on the line here in just a second. He's the guy who's training Lucas Van Ness in the offseason, but obviously going to be a glowing report there. But those are the types of people that NFL coaches will be calling.
Well, I keep thinking about what Rod Marinelli said when we asked him about this defense. You know, when Eberflus, who loved Marinelli, came here. I remember I asked him, is a three technique somebody who plays that position or somebody you go and find and fit to that position? And he said, "Ooh, that's a good question." Because, like, you can grab somebody, like the Bears talked to the Northwestern kid, Adebare, and said, "Hey, could you do this?" Van Ness might be a perfect fit for that, and they might be thinking about that even though he hasn't showcased
it. All right, so that was like the personal side with the guy who coached him in high school. Now we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty with the man who is training Lucas Van Ness for the NFL. He goes by D-Line Coach Ed on Twitter, which is fantastic. Eddie McGilvra has coached first-round picks on the D-line in each of the last four NFL drafts, including Aiden Hutchinson. Coach Ed, thank you for your time. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm doing great out here. It's raining in Southern California, but, you know, I guess Californians say we need it, so we just bear with it.
Yeah, we have absolutely no sympathy for you. I think it's been gray for like 40 straight days in Chicago. Let's pick up the conversation where we were just ending it with his high school coach. What do you think Lucas profiles to edge rusher, three technique? What do you think his best fit is in the NFL?
I think his best fit will probably be on the edge in the NFL. Not to say he can't move inside in certain sub packages, but I think he'll have the most success every down and on the edge.
Okay. The power is incredible, obviously, and we see lots of unbelievable bull rushes. Is it a matter of developing the moves on the edge? What is his challenge right now to be considered a great edge?
I think he needs to, and he's working on refining some of the stuff he's good at, you know, sharpening those skills. His get off needed a little bit of work, and then some counters off of his power. Like you said, he does a really good job. He's tremendous at getting into his bull rush, but I think in the NFL, you know, you can't limit yourself by just sticking to one thing. And the offensive linemen and the coaches do a great job of, you know, studying film and watching what you're good at and taking that away. So I think if he can develop something off of his power, he's gonna transfer that into a phenomenal career in the NFL.
So the J.J. Watt comps get thrown around sometimes just because of, I think, of the rawness, perhaps, and that ability to be on the edge and inside. Do you understand those comps when they get thrown around for Lucas? Does it make sense?
I can see some of it for sure. I mean, to me, it's always hard to comp a Hall of Fame player to a kid coming out of college, but I could definitely see some comps coming out from, like, I like to compare guys that are when they were coming out at the time, like when JJ was coming out of Wisconsin. You know, I could probably see a little bit of that in Lucas for sure.
So we're talking to, you know, D-line coach Ed. You did Aiden Hutchinson last year. Who are the other first round picks that you've trained in the last four drafts?
I had Quiddy Pay for the Colts, Jalen Phillips for the he's with Miami Dolphins. I had Quinnen Williams. When back in 2019, when he was getting ready, coming out of Bama. But, you know, a lot of similarities in the fact that those guys were all very raw with their technique and their talent was off the charts. But you can see they just needed to refine a couple of things getting ready for the NFL. So I think Lucas is right there with those guys.
So you're then very close with him as he's going through this process. You know, mock drafts are weird, and it's done by people like us in the media. You're much closer to it. What type of interest is he garnering?
I've heard everything from, you know, he'll top 10 to if he's there at 15, he won't go past 15. If, you know, if he's there, I couldn't imagine him slipping past 2025. Like, I'd be shocked if he didn't get in the top 2025 picks with a talent like he has. And honestly, too, like, him not playing or starting at Iowa really had nothing to do with his play. And I think, if anything, it's going to benefit him because he's healthy and he has fresh legs.
Wasn't the thing at Iowa that Kirk Ferentz just kind of gave ceremonial starts to seniors?
For sure. I think it was something like that where, you know, the seniors play first. And, you know, him being, I think he was a freshman and redshirt sophomore the 2 years he played. So, yeah, I could see that could coming into a factor. But, you know, I don't think it affected him at all. I think, if anything, it helped him, and he was humbled by it, learned from it, and now he's excited for the next chapter.
Yeah, I was reading that he played more snaps than all but one Iowa lineman this past year, regardless of the ceremonial starts. So you're working with others in this draft, right, Ed? Like, you're working with Zach Harrison? Do I have that right?
Yes, sir. The group I have it's all through the same agency, Athletes First.
Sure.
And yeah, Zach is one of the five guys in the group. Nolan Smith from Georgia. Nesta Jade Silvera was another one. And then what am I blanking on? Lucas. And then Brian Breesy.
So we're trying to find a three tech, man. It's everything. There's Mazai Smith out of Michigan. I'm sure you're familiar with all these guys then. Who's the best three technique in this batch that you're working with?
I mean, Brian Breesy is a world-class talent. It's going to be hard for anybody to pass him up. If his name is up on the board and you're in need of an interior defensive lineman that can play right away, Brian is going to be a sure thing for you.
How does he compare to Quinnen Williams?
Quinnen was recruited to Alabama as an outside linebacker.
Well, he's one of the biggest humans I've ever seen, so that's weird.
The Quinnen story is actually hilarious. He was there as an outside linebacker as a true freshman, and their nose guard on scout team goes down one day, and Coach Saban's just like, get somebody in there. Quinnen just jumps in there at, you know, 2:30 soaking wet. My dog's going to go crazy.
You're good. All good, man. It's raining.
And he's just like, Quinnen jumps in there and just starts killing the starting center. And next thing you know, Saban's like, oh, there's our nose guard.
Wow. Well, that's ridiculous. All right, so you think Breesy's a sure thing as a three tech. You think Lucas Van Ness, top 20, top 25, he needs to work on a counter off of the power, but the motor is awesome. I mean, Nolan Smith is the guy who's probably risen more on draft boards than anyone else because of the freaking nature athleticism. What do you think of him before we let you go?
Yeah, I think he's going to be – Nolan might be the guy that goes first out of everybody just because of the combine and everything that he put on display. Being a national champion, too, it's going to be hard to pass up a guy like that, and he's going to take over a room in an interview and stuff like that. He's an incredible character.
Eddie, thanks for the time, man. We learn a lot talking to guys like you who are working with these dudes, so we appreciate it.
Thank you.
All good, man. I appreciate the time. You guys take care out there.
All right, at D-Line Coach Ed, Eddie McGilvra on Twitter. What a crazy gig.
Yeah,
tied in with an agency, and then you coach all of these dudes in the first round?
He works at a tiny school called College of the Canyons out there, but you get tied in with the agency, and you become the D-Line Coach.
One of the best ambassadors for the World Baseball Classic, our friend, a top newsmaker, now 8 days ahead of opening day as well, John Morosi. What does he think Shohei Ohtani's going to sign for, and what did last night mean for baseball? Next on The Score.
Hey, John boy, how's the weather? John Morosi.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Morosi. Where is Jeff Passan in all of this?
Here's John Morosi.
Where is Jeff Passan?
Should we just call Jeff Passan right now?
Yes, just call him.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
JP Morosi had it first. How you feeling, Padres fans?
MLB Network Insider.
You must be beaming right now. What's the vibe like for Team USA?
And then you're right. Merry Christmas to you, because I feel that way here this evening.
NBC Sports contributor.
Yusho omerito gozaimasu. Congratulations.
You know, I really love the fact that the baseball in Japan is really getting closer to the baseball over here. These young pitchers that we brought along, you know, they went out there and they competed, and they competed very well. And, you know, it was great to see that.
Koriyama-san, domo arigatou gozaimashita.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy, I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me, it means the world.
With Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
The man has been an ambassador for international baseball for years. This has to be sweet, sweet vindication. John Morosi with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. I mean, damn, JP, we don't script these things, but that felt like a movie script last night.
Well, as my colleague on the World Feed broadcast, Yonder Alonso, said more than once, are you not entertained? Are you not entertained during the broadcast? Because it was exactly true. My gosh, you're right. Everything had played out in such an amazing and almost surreal fashion that, of course, we were saying the night before, well, this was Shohei and Trout, and maybe we just sort of manifested it into existence because that's what we saw. And I'll just tell you what, I was there in our broadcast position there next to Team Japan's dugout, and I put down the microphone. Obviously, Dave and Yonder were upstairs in the World Feed doing the play-by-play and the analyst work, and there wasn't much for the third voice to do during that time, so I just sat there and enjoyed it, guys. It was one of the coolest things I've seen in my life.
That's pretty awesome, John, and so many of us were watching and enjoying, but you with that vantage point, it looked like Ohtani at his very best as a pitcher, getting up there at 100 with that ride and the perfect slider. It seemed like he himself has risen to the moment, and the whole world has noticed, haven't they?
Yes, it's a great call. We are getting and seeing the best of him in this tournament. And I think on one note, yes, we of course see him excel and shine as no one does in Major League Baseball. But competing for a championship and having a chance to win something that meant that much to his country, we saw this additional layer of desire and of performance and of intensity that we just don't get a chance to see him exhibit because the Angels haven't been playing games like this. And just think about it. If the greatest that we've ever seen in our lives in sports, across sports, if they had never played on good teams, you never really get to see this side of them. You never really get to imagine and envision how they perform under the brightest lights. And we got to see that with Shohei in this tournament. He's the MVP of the tournament. And you're right. It wasn't just the quality of the pitches, but the location. Like that, the last swinging strike he got on Trout might have actually been a called strike too had Trout not swung. And it was the slider from hell. No, I mean, nobody could have possibly connected with that pitch. And the points about how Trout almost never has three swinging strikes in the same at-bat, it was extraordinary to watch. And he was so inspired, you could tell. And to back up a little bit more about why I was so sure that at some point he was going to pitch in that game is that Koriyama-san, who's the wonderful manager of Team Japan, he was the first manager that had inspired and encouraged Shohei to be a two-way player in NPB. He was his manager with the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters for years. He's known Shohei since he was a teenager. And so when you add all of that up, he had the chance to do this on the ultimate stage, the stage of stages. There's no, especially in Japanese baseball, there is no higher moment than what you saw last night. So there was 100 times out of 100, if the game was close, he was going to pitch. Because there was no better way to celebrate and write the history of their relationship than to have Shohei pitch in that game. And I love that for all the words of caution
well, would the Angels have allowed it? What does Perry Manassian think? What does Phil Nevin think? Basically, last night, who cares? It was about the game, and it was about trying to win. And I just love that. It was a deserved title for Japan, and it was just a wonderful night for baseball.
John Morosi, right off the plane after being field level for one of the coolest moments of his life, his words with Ohtani striking out Trout to win the World Baseball Classic for Japan. JP, take this in any direction. The impact that it will have for baseball around the world, the impact it will have for the WBC in the future, the impact it will have for Major League Baseball. What will the impact and legacy of this World Baseball Classic be?
It's a great question, and obviously, to your point, there's a lot of different ways to go with it. I think number one that stands out to me is we're going to see moments during the year where there's maybe a bat flip or a show of emotion or players coming out of the dugout, and there's an embrace at home plate without the game being over, and it's all considered okay and within the normal bounds of what we typically now see in baseball without there being the same blowback, because we remembered how this was the last couple weeks, the apex of the sport. And so once you know how good it is and how good it can be, there's no need to fight against it anymore. And it's interesting, you know, I was talking recently with Mark DeRosa, of course, the manager of Team USA. And, you know, at different times, D-Ro has in recent years, whether it was a bat flip or a big show of emotion, sometimes, you know, he's from a little bit of an older school. And so I think he has at times, you know, maybe not quite embraced it as much as, for example, I would. But then he said one of the times he went into the clubhouse after I think it was maybe the Venezuela game, and he said to Tim Anderson, he said, "Hey, Tim, I get it now. Like, it all makes sense to me." And I think that's important. First of all, as a friend of D-Rose, I love that he managed the team. I thought he did a great job. And also, he got sort of this firsthand education in the modern player and how the current players show emotion and embrace these moments. And so I think that's cool that, like, this only happens in the construct of a World Baseball Classic, where someone whose opinion matters as much as D-Rose does gets a chance to be around Tim Anderson and talk about how much he really admires him and respects him as a person and as a player. That's cool, and that's going to endure. I think on the global side of things, you saw a country like Venezuela have their best showing in a long time. You saw Mexico really get on the map in a pretty profound way that I think is going to endure and really start to catalyze movement in Mexico for their baseball program to get stronger and stronger. You're seeing Europe now getting involved. You saw Shohei show up to Florida wearing a Czech Republic hat backwards. That was awesome. The Czechs won a game. Italy reached the quarterfinal. Great Britain won a game. So there was just a lot of really positive momentum that I think started from a lot of places around the world. And now you're going to see those countries get stronger and stronger. You know, we're maybe not quite as global now as basketball is at the moment, but I think we're starting to make some real progress here. And when you keep checking back 10 years, 15 years later, this to me feels like a real watershed moment for this tournament and for the sport in a way that I think we're going to keep talking about seeds that were planted now really having profound impacts on the game going forward.
John, you've been on it. You used the word inflection point or the phrase inflection point on Twitter, and I've mentioned it several times. I think you're exactly right in some of the ways that you said. We've seen that the professional teams and league in Japan does not stand in the way of roster construction, of pitcher utilization, because they get that this is not about their league, it's about baseball overall. And will MLB and the teams understand that? It's bigger than MLB. So will Rob Manfred and will owners allow team construction and pitcher utilization to be a little more free next time around?
That's a great question. I think they will, and I think we're already moving in that direction. I really believe that for all the players who didn't, all the pitchers who didn't show up, because I want to make clear on that really – position player wise on Team USA, we missed Aaron Judge, and he's really the only one that I would say was a glaring omission of not having. I mean, for the most part, we had everybody that you could have dreamed of having on this team. So position player wise, we're already there. I think that in the pitching world, we're maybe a couple players away, maybe it's a couple agents, maybe it's a couple teams. There's probably a few key people to kind of win over to your side to convince them that it's a good idea to do it. And then you're there. So Team USA, they had enough pitching to win it last time, and they had enough pitching to make it to the final game within a strike or a two or a swing of winning it this time. So I really don't think we're that far off. I think we're actually quite close. We're, again, to your point, we're not all the way to where Japan is in terms of understanding the importance of this, but we're getting there, and we're a lot further along than we were years ago. I think there's this balance now of the caution and the analytics of pitching, and I understand all of those things. But there's a way to both have your best pitchers performing and to also get them ready and have them prepared for the season. You look around Major League spring training right now, and I would have liked to have seen Dylan Cease on this team. I would have liked to have seen Alek Manoah on this team. And you look at how many pitches guys like the two of them are throwing right now, and they're basically at the level where Adam Wainwright was and where Merrill Kelly was. So it's not that big of an ask, in my opinion. And I really think we're closer than it might think to getting all the best guys there. And honestly, I had one Team USA player come up to me last night and say, I really think that as competitive as this tournament was and how this last game went, I really think that some American pitchers who didn't show up this time are going to show up next time because they're going to know that we were that close this time. So it's the good kind of competitiveness that I think is showing up. And, you know, by the same token, Team Japan's pitching was a procession of different pitchers. Imanaga was not their number one starter, and obviously their number one starter pitcher at the very end of the game, but they had a different way of going about things. And I think that for the U.S., it's a bit more knowledge and experience with tournament baseball, plus maybe getting Dylan Cease in there next time and Alek Manoah. I think just those two guys making a different decision could have, I think, meaningfully changed the way the tournament unfolded for Team USA.
Two barbershop-style, sports talk radio-style questions to get you out of here, JP. Who's the best baseball player in the world?
Shohei Ohtani.
Okay, so he's better than Mike Trout. What do you think Shohei Ohtani's contract will look like when he's a free agent next year?
So I believe it's going to start with a four. I think it's going to be a $400 million deal plus. And now, obviously, that's contingent on certainly a healthy season for him, pitching and hitting. But we just have to realize and appreciate that he is doing things that no one else can do or ever has done, not even Babe Ruth. And so when you add that into it and you combine – the marketing superpower that he brings. It's hard for me to describe to you other than to say I saw hundreds of media members watching his batting practice intently with phones out recording. And then when he was done, the fans that were there gave him a standing ovation for BP, for batting practice. I've covered a lot of amazing things in my career. I've covered a lot of World Series games and All-Star games. I have never seen that before in my life. Never. I covered Aaron Judge hitting 62 home runs last year, and I didn't see that necessarily at Yankee Stadium. It's just, it is a truly extraordinary thing. He is a phenomenon of humanity. And when you have that, there's just additional layers of marketing ability and an awe factor that I think helps you maybe get your money back even when you're spending $400 million. So there you go, phenomenon of humanity. Put that in quotes there. There you go.
Is phenomenal. You know what? You're a phenomenon of humanity too, John Paul Morosi. So they held up a jersey and a medal for Seiya Suzuki. That makes a Cub fan think that the respect for Seiya, the warmth there, could indeed be a factor as you dream of Shohei next year. Why not?
Hey, that's a great point. I mean, I do think that, you know, my sense is that maybe the West Coast teams will still have a bit of an advantage in the courtship of Shohei. But I do think, to your point, we're looking for any little indication and hint as to where he might be going. And yes, Seiya Suzuki is a really revered figure on that team. Of course, he was when that team won the Premier 12 championship in 2019, Seiya was their MVP. And so a lot of players in that uniform on that field last night are very dear friends and respect Seiya immensely. And so maybe it is Ohtani. Maybe it's Roki Sasaki when he comes over. Maybe it's Murakami when he comes over. Maybe it's Imanaga when he comes over. He was a starting pitcher last night. I do think it can help to have a beacon, if you will, someone who is kind of the leader in that regard. I think Seiya's got a lot of respect there, and it's going to be so interesting, guys. It's like there's going to be two ways to cover the season this year. One is the season, and then one is the latest on Shohei. And the Shohei beat is going to be like there's like 31 teams. There's like 30 teams, and there's him that we're going to have to follow during the course of the year in the best way, by the way. So I can't wait, and it was just a great, great way to start the year.
Great stuff, JP. Can't wait to have you as a part of the Parkinson Spiegel Show again this baseball season. Thank you, sir.
You guys are too kind, and thanks for indulging me with a full international baseball talk segment. I really feel like we've all arrived, man. It's pretty cool. I feel very, very happy today.
Good for you, John. That's why you're a phenomenon of humanity.
Yusho omedetou gozaimasu. Congratulations.
You're the best, man. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. All the best. Thank you.
That's John Morosi.
A texter coming at me. They get it. Very condescending way to put it, Spiegs. The World Baseball Classic is not bigger than MLB, no matter how much you want it to be. No, it isn't right now. But is basketball as a sport and a global phenomenon bigger than the NBA? Maybe. Is hockey as a sport and a global game bigger than the NHL? Hell yes, it is. Like, things evolve and change. So no, that's why it's an inflection point. In 20 years, is baseball as a global thing bigger than MLB? Maybe.
I doubt it, but I understand what you're saying. And hey, man, even if it's not, it's just a good thing to grow the game as a supplement, as an extra, as another vehicle to promote and grow the sport. So it doesn't have to be bigger than or anything like that. It's just another thing.
But it is on the table that it could be because there are sports that are bigger than whichever league you and I love. Of course, this is America's game and starts with MLB and blah, blah, blah. But doesn't mean it ends that way.
A top NFL draft analyst says the Bears are the floor for a high-profile prospect. Next on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
I don't know what's going on with any of it.
Afternoons on The Score.
Thanks to John Morosi. I think we're doing a great job for mailing it in heading to Vegas, frankly.
It just shows you what we're capable of.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, imagine if we were 100% emotionally present.
It'd be tough with all these conversations.
Tough
about
to beat.
Coffee runs these guys are getting to get caffeine in. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Biggs asked me why earlier, like why? To get caffeinated.
Yeah, yeah, to stay awake for a long time in Vegas tonight.
Wait till the folks at home find out that the next 2 days shows are completely recruited.
Yeah. It's going to be a huge disappointment.
They're in the can already. Good job, everybody.
But Mel Kiper and Todd McShay.
I know those guys.
We're talking to each other doing, you know, they both put out a new mock draft and then they talk about it, do a podcast. Woo. It's draft season.
There are mocks everywhere.
There are. Listen to how Todd McShay talked about Jalen Carter, the questions, and the team that he won't get by.
Played great at Georgia with the pads on and had a lot on his mind. There was a lot of things working through off the field. And you think about late April and where we'll be when the season begins. He's the best player in the draft, and you're getting him at 6. Pick 5 at Seattle, as Todd mentioned, down to 10 to Philadelphia. And every team in between, every team in between could be looking at Jalen Carter. So for me, he doesn't get past 10. I have him going 6 because, like I say, Todd, everybody between 5 and 10 could certainly use him.
Yeah, and I think the Bears would love for him to fall to number 9. But here's the thing. Let's not kid ourselves. We're going to have 4 quarterbacks potentially go in the top 5 like Mel has in this draft, which would be the first time in the common draft era that we would see that. Quarterbacks are going to fly off the board. But let's be real. And Will Anderson's a great player. Jalen Carter is the best football player in this draft. Mm. If you take away the character, he is the best football player on Saturdays that we watched in the last couple seasons in the draft. He was the best defensive tackle on a team where he wasn't a starter 2 years ago because they had two first-round draft picks. And then he comes out this year. Yeah, he had the injury in the middle of the year. He could have shut it down. He didn't shut it down. At the end of the year, he played the best football of his career. He was absolutely dominant. But now you have, as a general manager and owner and a head coach, you've got this scale that you've got to weigh. And it really comes down to organizational principles. Some organizations I've talked to say, you know what, we're just not a Jalen Carter guy. It's not, that's not the identity. It's not the psychology. It's not what we want in our locker room. There's character issues on the field, or, you know, football character issues. There's off the field personal character issues. We just don't want to deal with all that. That's not how we draft. There are other teams that are much more open to it. And now that it's just 1 year probation and they got the legal thing behind them and they got it done earlier, which I thought was interesting. They pushed it up a month and got it done as a 1 year probation. So basically he's not going to miss any football. So now you got to decide, all right, is this a guy we want to bring into our locker room, knowing that there was character issues before the car racing incident? There was that incident that is highly alarming, and then he puts on the 9 pounds. And I haven't heard of a player not being able to finish drills. He didn't test either. Mm. He didn't run a 40. He didn't do the jumps and the three cone and the short shuttle and all that other stuff that guys do before they do their position drills. So he came in fresh and still couldn't finish. So there's a lot to weigh there, but I agree with Mel completely. It starts at 5 with Jalen Carter, and it ends probably at 9 with Chicago in terms of his range.
There's a lot of stuff there from McShay and Kuiper.
I just so you know, because we'll talk about this a ton over the next 5 weeks, that's going to be a tough one for me to get out of my head. Because like he's saying, I've talked to teams that are not in the Jalen Carter business, but he's not getting past the Bears at 9.
Mm-hmm.
That presumably, it doesn't take a genius to connect the dots, that means that he thinks that they would not be one of the teams that would take them off their board, even though they've talked character,
yeah.
But they've also talked so much about needing a 3 technique. I don't think he's going to be there for them at 9. I told you last week, I think Detroit at 6 is the one that makes the most sense for me, because Seattle added Draymond Jones from the Broncos.
Yeah.
But if he's there, Todd McShay says Bears are taking him. That's interesting to me.
It is interesting, and I'm glad you played it. And I don't believe it when a team says our principles don't allow for that. Like,
of course.
I don't believe that.
Because at some point,
right,
a third round pick, your principles would go out the window because the risk wouldn't be as much,
right,
the investment.
Right, but when you look at a guy who is doing this amount of damage to himself,
yeah,
especially with everything that has come after and the 9 pound weight gain and not being able to finish the drills, now I'm seeing a guy who might not be able to stop his own slide, a guy who is mentally perhaps not up to the task it takes to be a mature professional. And so I got to bring him in. And we know the Bears are bringing him in. So the Bears will bring him in a couple of weeks before the draft, and they'll talk to him, and they'll try to figure out. I don't know if they can run him through some drills, but is he in shape? Does he care? Has he caught himself in this possible moment of destroying his career? And if he hasn't caught himself, then I go nowhere near him, even if my principles allow me to do it. You know what I mean?
I get it.
Where I am, I'm out because it scares me, and I don't think I would invest in it, and I hope that the Bears are out. But I admit that they could very well be in. That personal piece would be a deal breaker, even if your philosophies allow it.
I'm definitely not out. Just knowing how NFL teams value talent, I could hear the redemption arc story already. Made a terrible mistake, panicked, got bad advice, weighed on him mentally. Once the legal system ran its course, he already got his community service. He did the 80 hours. He vowed to do the 80 hours before the NFL draft. He did it in the 5 weeks leading up from when the legal system ran its course to the draft, so he could be fully committed to being a professional. And Jalen Carter's ready to prove all the doubters wrong,
okay,
and be an upstanding citizen and go dominate on Sundays like he did on Saturdays.
I'd like to wish Dan Campbell and the Lions well.
I get it. But I think that story is coming. Daniel Negreanu in 30 minutes from Vegas, one of the best gamblers in the world. There's a huge sporting event going on we haven't given a ton of attention to. Parker to Spiegel.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.